www.qc.ca. Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, Chautauqua, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, recording from home on Thursday, April 28th, 2022. An absolutely jam-packed show on the way. Writer Marc-André Thibault and director Ellen David team up to take his play, Mazel Tov, to new audiences.
Ellen, she came and saw the show and we said, okay, we should try to do an English version. So I'm really thrilled about it.
So I went to see the play and I was just sort of blown away. I mean, it was very dark, very funny, very tragic comic, and it just sort of pushed the envelope in so many ways.
Lisa Rubin at the Siegel Center also has a newly translated play, April Fools, a rock cabaret about a woman who dares to indulge in a fantasy.
But she questions, you know, can we find room or make room, or why do we not allow ourselves to talk about the fantasies that are buried, the secrets that are buried within us? And I think that's a very rare thing that we to present on stage. We don't talk about that a lot.
Jimmy Blay at Geordi Theatre on From the Stars in the Sky to the Fish in the Seas, teaching kids to accept themselves.
The way that we're trying to have people look at it through this story is that things are just a little bit more complex than the binary or polarity or duality. There's a lot of things that live in between those two poles, let's say, and outside of them as well.
And choreographer Ariane Boulet creates a work inspired by 8 years of dancing for residents in long-term care.
Like if every part of this society is in a way also a little part of myself. And when I started dancing in CHSLD, I was realizing how being and meeting and spending time in their relationship to time and space and relation would permit me to be differently than that I am normally with people of my age that are all in this way of being, working and everything, and that they would help me like discover life differently.
4 interviews, 5 guests. Let's get right into it. Mazel Tov, a common 2-word expression in Yiddish used to congratulate someone on their good fortune. You might use it, let's say, at a wedding, which is why playwright Marc-André Thibault borrowed the expression for the title of his show. But unfortunately for this bride and groom, an interfaith couple, freshly married, something weird and sort of violent went down at their nuptials, an outburst to tangle out over the course of a play. When director Ellen David saw the show in its original French, she proposed to Marc-André that they bring it to English audiences. And that is what they will do this weekend as Mazel Tov gets its English language premiere by Infinitheater at Kin Experience on St. Catherine. Ellen says it's a wonderful, immersive experience. I caught up with her as well as Marc-André earlier today. Bienvenue, Marc-André and Ellen, to Upstage. So nice to have you both here.
Thank you.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having us.
Marc-André, this is so exciting. You're getting to see a show, your show, done in another language a couple of years after it was first kind of presented in a reading format, also directed by Ellen. Marc-André, can you tell me what this journey's been like for you?
It's a big premiere for me to have a big first to have this play in English now. So I began the writing like 8 or 9 years ago. I wrote the play. It took something like 4 years to write the play, and we produced it in 2017. And that's where I met Ellen. She came and saw the show, and we said, okay, we should try to do an English version. So I'm really thrilled about it. So the play talks about Jewish women that marries a non-Jewish man. And at the wedding, there is something happening. There's a bit of chaos at the wedding. And the groom gets heavily wounded and they have to go to the hospital. So the play begins at that part. We're at the hospital just after the wedding, and we happen to learn that the best man, which is the best friend of the groom, did some anti-Semitic comments and actions that made furious the bride and her family. So that sets the play. It's really dark. It's really funny at the beginning, and
I feel like you have to make it. I mean, having an incident at a wedding where you end up in the ER, it has to be a dark comedy, right? There's no other way to spin that. I also love when we start a play when the bad thing has happened and we as the audience get to unravel that. Was that from the get-go how you were going to start the story? That's where you wanted to start?
Yeah, it's the first idea that came to my mind. Just how could it begin really bad, and how can I make it worse after that? So the play is it's getting really far in this drama, always with a funny touch, but I can't tell you too much, but it goes really far. I really like to put my characters in deep beep.
You're putting them through a lot.
Yeah.
And Ellen, the way Marc-André says it, this was an instant connection for you. Coup de coeur, you met him at the production that you had seen and said, let's get this in English. Was that that was an instant moment for you that you felt you had to?
No, not necessarily. I mean, it was, you know, winter, December of 2017. And I saw, you know, I like to try to see everything I can. And I saw this show called Mazel Tov at Prospero by Théâtre Bistouri, and I said, oh, what is this? And so I went to see the play, and I was just sort of blown away. I mean, it was very dark, very funny, very tragic comic, and it just sort of pushed the envelope in so many ways. And there was a talk back after, which was really fascinating to me. So I went up and introduced myself to the writer and director, Marc-André Thibault. And we sort of struck up a friendship and, you know, talked about the possibility of presenting something like this in English. So he went ahead and did a translation, and we worked together on it a little bit at some points to finesse some things. And then I brought it to Infinite Theater in their Pipeline series, and we sort of had we had a reading at late 2019. And eventually the idea was to create a production, but of course with the pandemic, everything got delayed. And so here we are, you know, after many postponements and many waves, we are now in end of April, May of 2022, 5 years after, almost 5 years after I saw the show for the first time.
That is the voice of Ellen David, the director of Mazel Tov, and also speaking with Marc-André Thibault, who is the writer and the translator of this piece. Marc-André, it's a bit unusual to have the writer do the translation, because oftentimes you're translating into your native tongue. Here you're translating into English. Can you tell me about that process?
Yeah, it was quite a challenge. I have some experience in translating from English to French, but it was the first time that I tried to translate my work in English. So I needed some help at some point. So Ellen really helped me with this translation, just to make sure that everything holds up. We work really well together. Ellen really feels the play. We have good discussion about the writing, but also about directing the play. So we exchange a lot about the play. So I'm really pleased to have her on this show.
I am feeling vibes from you too, that this is a collaborative like partnership here, which is so fascinating and such a beautiful thing to have unfold. Let's talk a bit about the content and the fact that we have an interfaith couple coming together. What spoke to both of you? Ellen, you're taking in the play, you want to direct it. Marc-André, this is your baby, you wrote it. But so you're coming from it from different perspectives. But what about the material speaks to each of you? Maybe Ellen, you go first.
As you say, Sarah, it's an interfaith couple getting married, and the groom, who is not Jewish, is honoring the bride's or the bride's family's customs. And at one point, he says almost that, you know, and because he's not Jewish, there's a priest present as well. So both faiths are represented in the ceremony. And he says, you know, having a priest and a rabbi at a wedding almost sounds like the beginning of a bad joke. And it is kind of slightly prophetic, because it does unravel not specifically because of the fact that they're interfaith initially, but something happens at the wedding that causes a series, a kind of avalanche of events to take place. And that's when chaos ensues and things are said or heard that really go beyond the pale in light of the faiths of the individuals and the circumstances. And so what the play is looking at to me is individuals that are in very extreme circumstances that react in a certain way and may say or do things that provoke other people's.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, recording from home on Thursday, May 5th, 2022. On tonight's show, my guests, Debbie Friedman and Allie Broomer of Contact Theatre present Next to Normal.
I find often when we talk and when society talks about mental health, it's almost in a singular sort of tone. You know, if you're suffering or if someone in your family is suffering, but we don't really talk about the ripple effects that it has and the fact that you're not just suffering from mental illness in a silo. Share brought together to share some gratefulness together. That was kind of our regular closure practice. And I think it really helped just kind of create a nice division between your character and yourself. That's kind of the main role of closure practices, is having that clear division so you're not carrying kind of the weight of all these characters' lives with you when you also have the weight of your own life.
Jason Grimmer and James McGee on a new venue for comedy in the Mile End.
Over the time of the pandemic, when there was an interim, when there were no improv classes being offered, I started offering them at Variations, which then blossomed into a full-fledged kind of improv stream at the school, turning into more of a performance school as opposed to only a dance school.
Well, I would say that Mr. Brian Adams said it best when he said he just couldn't stand another lonely night. And I think there is no better way, and I mean this from my heart of hearts, to find ways to connect with people on a level that is both educational as well as fun and energetic. Take an improv class.
And choreographer Simon Portugal questions our relationship with the online world.
So I think they're shaping our sociality, how we are together. And I wanted to, think about that through formal structures on stage together, sort of turning the algorithm into like a shape.
Before we begin, some updates. Listen, there is so much theater to see here in Montreal this week. It's an embarrassment of riches. Miranda Rose Hall's A Play for the Living in a Time of Extinction is now open at Centaur Theater. I saw the opening last Friday and I loved it. It feels like an episode of Nova or Radiolab presented on stage, with dips into science and geography, but it's also searing, a meditation on life and what's truly worth living and fighting for. As you might recall on this show, Miranda told us that she sets the scene with Naomi, a theater manager on the final night of a play tour, but her actors are missing. So she musters up all she's read, digested, and pondered about the very existence of our human lives, as well as the ongoing fight for climate change, and what are we doing to the planet? If you're wondering whether we as a society can slow down our consumption and do better for the planet and ourselves, you'll love the show. It's on at Centaur now, centaurtheater.com. Also opening tonight, April Fools, a rock star who decides to embark on an affair, even though she's got kids and a husband waiting at home. Would you take the risk for love if you might lose it all? That's at the Siegel Center starting tonight, siegelcenter.org. Also, Mazel Tov by Infinitheater. It's about an interfaith wedding where punches are pulled, and it's been selling out. So you want to run to see if you can get tickets before the end of the run. Visit infinitheater.com. And yesterday, the interim public health director of Quebec announced that you will no longer need to mask in public starting on Saturday, May 14th. And this is the first time the mask mandate has been lifted since July 2020. There are some exceptions, like in healthcare settings and on public transit. But will theaters still ask audiences to keep their masks on for now? We'll see soon enough. Will you want to keep your mask on when you're in the audience? While Dr. Belot does point out that we seem to be over the sixth wave of COVID, a lot of experts are warning that it's a good idea to keep your masks on just to be super safe, especially for individuals who are immunocompromised and don't really have a lot of choice in the matter. Now, on with our show. Diana Goodman is a mom in suburbia, waiting up late for a son who has broken curfew and also supervising a daughter who is studying for a big test. But over the course of the night and into the next morning, we realize something is amiss in this picture of a suburban family. Diana has bipolar disorder, and her condition and the work it takes to keep her well weaves a web around her whole family. Brian Yorkey's rock musical, Next to Normal, won 3 Tonys the year it opened on Broadway, back in 2009. And the following year, it won the Pulitzer Prize for Drama, partly because it broke new ground in what musicals could cover in terms of subject matter. Now, an indie theater company that got its start pre-pandemic is about to present the story of Diana and the Goodmans. Contact Theater debuted in 2019 with Bonnie and Clyde, but the pandemic canceled their production of Chicago, due for April 2020. The company founders say they hope Next to Normal will highlight the overall impact of mental illness on not just the individuals who are going through their condition, but the communities around them, especially as we emerge from the pandemic and the realizations that a lot of people are not doing so well is becoming clear. Deborah Friedman is the director and choreographer, and Ellie Broomer is the producer, and they're very excited to once again raise the curtains. I spoke with Debbie and Ellie yesterday. Welcome to Upstage, Debbie and Ellie. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us. So excited.
So tell me why you settled on this particular production.
Yeah, so Next to Normal is a show that has been near and dear to both of us for a very long time. As soon as we founded Contact, we knew this was on our list of shows to do. And right now just feels like the perfect moment to do it in many ways. There's so much conversation going on about mental health, and yet there's still a lot of stigmas that need to be worked through. And we want to keep that conversation going. We want to invite people to take that conversation into their homes, into their own families, and hopefully find little nuggets in this show that they can relate to.
Ellie, for you, is there something that really resonated with Next to Normal?
You know, I find often when we talk and when society talks about mental health, it's almost in a singular sort of tone. You know, if you're suffering or if someone in your family is suffering, but we don't really talk about the ripple effects that it has and the fact that you're not just suffering from mental illness in a silo. And what's really beautiful about the show is that it explores, okay, what happens if you're a mother and you also have to raise the family, or you're a father and you have a job and you're a partner to someone, and it explores all of what mental illness can, how can that affects all those relationships, which is what I think is really important and what's my favorite part of the show, because it opens up the dialogue to other people to say, I know you're suffering. I recognize now that I am a part of either what can help you or even sometimes maybe can make it worse. Let's talk about that.
Right. So you're kind of digging below the surface and looking at the networks around people who are the big word suffering. And, you know, like, what is that actually like to go through that? So in that respect, tell me about Diana and Dan and who they are and why mental illness is a factor in their lives.
Yeah. So Diana is kind of the central pivotal role of the show in many ways. So she has been diagnosed as bipolar depressive with delusional episodes. And she's been kind of dealing with mental illness for a long time, even before the play starts. That's very clear. And Dan is her husband, who is constantly trying to support her and sometimes doesn't know how to, and sometimes thinks he knows how to, but it isn't actually what she needs. And that's part of what kind of drives the play forward, is the ways in which their interactions shift and the ways in which he kind of tries to support her in different ways. And she reacts to that sometimes in ways that he isn't expecting, in ways that she isn't expecting. And that's what really makes the drama of the show really interesting, but also really relatable, because I think sometimes we all think we know how to best help, but we don't often. And that's really what this play is a lot about.
We don't just see the family in this case. So we have Diana and Dan, who are parents, and they've got their kids. And Diana is our, as you were saying, is kind of our linchpin here. We also get to meet the mental health professionals who are helping the family, shepherding them through. Are the doctors like hindrances? Are they helps? How do they relate to the family? And why is there more than one doctor?
Well, I think this goes to the journey of mental health. And it's not just the singular moment and here's your therapy or here's your medication and go on. And I think that's exemplified through them having to find different doctors with different approaches, because the ways that they're working is not necessarily what Diana needs, even though it could be what somebody else needs. So the role of the doctor is actually played by a singular actor. And I think that kind of helps exemplify the notion of someone trying to support in different ways and trying to figure out what works well.
I'd love to ask about some of the casting. Lisa McCormick plays the role of Diana, and Daniel Wilkenfield plays the doctor, who is the face of several other doctors. So tell me about why you chose these particular performers for these roles.
Yeah, I mean, this audition process was really exciting. We had so much incredible talent. We had so many amazing people. It really came down a lot to the dynamics between them. And that's especially when you're talking about Doctor and Diana, there is a very special dynamic that has to kind of exist between them. You have to find a doctor who is at once caring, but also at times cold. And especially because he is playing kind of these two different roles in one show, you kind of have to find someone with the range for that and the ability to do that, which Daniel was just a perfect fit. And Lisa really, she just kind of was like the linchpin in a way. Lisa is kind of the linchpin of our cast in the same way that Diana is for the family. Like, she just kind of brought everything together. Like, kind of once we cast her, it was just like everyone else just kind of made sense. And that was a really lovely moment in casting of like, ah, yes, everything will come together around this person, which is really great.
Yeah. When you're looking at casting a show, sometimes it simply does come down to those dynamics, and you might have somebody that's perfect in a role, but if there's no one sort of counter to them that works, that might not work for the overall show. And especially for this show, it only has six roles. So those six actors really had to be familiar already sort of at the onset of the process. So it was a tough process, but it was a lot of fun, and we have no regrets about anyone.
That is the voice of Ali Broomer, who is the producer on Next to Normal, presented by Contact Theater. She co-founded the company with Debbie Friedman, who is the director and choreographer on the production. This is coming at the close of Mental Health Week. I'm wondering what kind of conversations you guys had with the cast or with yourselves. You've already kind of really put a fine bow on, you know, why mental health is of interest to you guys and the message you're trying to put out there. But what kind of conversations were you having amongst yourselves about, you know, what it's like to deal with stigma?
Yeah. So once we chose this show, we actually engaged two drama therapists to be mental health consultants, which was really, really amazing. Kelly Armstrong and Flora Galeen, who are really, really great. And they helped us so, so much just in early conversations. So I had meetings with them actually throughout the process. About once a month, I would meet with one or the other, and we would kind of talk through things from how to create good closure practices for the cast, or how to handle certain material, or how to tackle some of the heavier moments in the show. And really for me, from the beginning, I knew that my take on the show, what I really wanted to do, was focus on the light and focus on the joy that exists, even in these darkest moments. So that's what we tried to do in the rehearsal room as well. We really tried to bring a lot of joy, a lot of fun, a lot of laughter, a lot of love into the space, to help us support through what admittedly can sometimes be very difficult material. Like, heads up for those coming to see the show, there is some really heavy material within the show. But we really focus on the light, we really focus on the joy, and we have this great support of these mental health consultants that did so much for us. So we were really, really grateful for that as well. That helped us out a lot.
Yeah. Debbie, you just referred to closure. Can I ask about that? Is that like something at the end of rehearsal or the end of a show, of a presentation?
Yeah, so this is something that became particularly important for this. It can be closure or de-rolling. There's kind of different ways that people in the industry talk about it, but it's essentially a little practice that you kind of create with the cast. Ideally, there's kind of a group practice, which is what we worked on together. And then I also, throughout the process, was consistently introducing suggestions from either a mental health or from my own research. looking at different types of closure practices, because that's the main thing that's tricky about mental health is it's so individualized. So it's like, you can't find the perfect formula where everyone's going to feel great after rehearsal. So the best thing we could do is offer a lot of different alternatives, but then also just taking a moment to share a breath together, to share some gratefulness together. That was kind of our regular closure practice. And I think it really helped just kind of create a nice division between your character and yourself. That's kind of the main role of closure practices, is having that clear division. So you're not carrying kind of the weight of all these characters' lives with you when you also have the weight of your own life. So there's always kind of a warm-up getting into the character, and then there's also the closure getting out of the character. And for this show in particular, I really tried to make sure that we had space and time for that.
Leaving the office at the office.
Exactly, exactly. Because as actors, you often don't really leave the office. You're often going home and reviewing lines still and doing that kind of stuff. So yeah, we had to have kind of like a set practice that helped hopefully get us in that direction.
Yeah.
Ellie?
Yeah, and I think that this whole process was also compounded by the fact that we were rehearsing during COVID, and we've pretty much up until 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, maybe, the cast really hadn't seen the lower half of each other's faces, because we had been rehearsing with masks, and, you know, as the guidelines were changing of how many people could be in the space at once, we were doing, you know, pared down rehearsals. So it added, I think, to the anxiety and the stress a little bit of how, you know, how we're making this musical where 90% of our rehearsal process is distance and in mass. But we did a lot of consulting. We had a lot of safety practices. We did a lot of anonymous sort of surveying with the cast to make sure that they're feeling comfortable and they're feeling comfortable to talk to us without being afraid that we're going to judge them or not be happy if they're uncomfortable in a situation. So there was a lot of extra work, but it really, really paid off.
I'm speaking with Ellie Brumer, who's the producer of Next to Normal, presented by Contact Theater, and joined by Debbie Freeman, director and choreographer. The show comes to Monument National this coming weekend. You mentioned that it is a musical. What kind of challenges did you face in setting up a musical with the distancing and the masks? What kind of challenges came with that?
The craziest thing is really the distance and kind of trying to maintain that as much as possible. I mean, even just in the rehearsal spaces that were available to us, at times that was challenging. So that was a big thing of like, also, I'm really, really focused in my work all the time on consent and on making sure that people feel safe and comfortable in order to give their best selves to the work. So this kind of added a new layer onto that. You know, like in the past, things as simple as like an arm touch isn't necessarily something I would have spent a lot of time creating consent practices for. But now every single moment of getting within a meter of each other was kind of a consent check and was a constant process of making sure that people felt comfortable, that people felt safe. That was really my main focus. And that was really the challenge I think I wasn't necessarily expecting, but it was kind of a fun challenge to have of this extra kind of layer of constantly having to check in and make sure people felt safe. Because as much as at first it felt really daunting, as it went forward, I think it actually created an environment where people were able to really release and let go and put their best selves on stage, which was really what we wanted. So I think in a way, even though it was a challenge, it actually made the show even better.
You guys are a young musical company. You started in 2019. Your second show was, you know, set to launch in spring of 2020. It was canceled, but here you are back on stage. What kind of challenges does a very young independent theater company face in a pandemic?
Yeah, a lot. I'm not going to lie. There are a lot of challenges that we have to overcome. I mean, notwithstanding pandemic aside, English musical theater in Montreal is just not funded very well. The opportunities for grants and for sponsorships are very, very minimal. So it is tough for us from that perspective, I suppose, especially as a young company. And something that we really set out to do is try our best to have a professional level environment. And we hope that's reflected in our shows. You know, some people hear independent or think community and are really surprised when they come to our shows. But we also want to mirror that in the equity that we're giving to our crew and our cast that come here, which is quite difficult to do in the current setting. So compounded on COVID, you know, arts funding was cut even more. Musical theater, because it's not original work, the funding is cut even less. So right now we're working with a couple of really, really awesome sponsors, and ticket sales is really what we're relying on right now. But we're really happy. We're doing what we love. We work with awesome crew, awesome performers, and a great, great venue, great supporters. So we'll keep going.
You must feel so proud of yourselves being able to bring this show finally to a stage. Must be a really good feeling.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to share it with everyone. I think this is just a really important show for this moment. So I'm just really excited for audiences to see work and for the cast and for the crew to be able to share their work and all of the passion they've put into this project with everyone.
Allie and Debbie, it's been so nice talking to you about this. Best of continued success. Can't wait to see the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
That was Deborah Friedman and Allie Broomer, co-founders of Contact Theater. Deborah is directing and choreographing their new musical, Next to Normal, by Brian Yorkie, and Allie is the producer. The show opens tomorrow night at Monument National in the Hydro-Québec studio on Saint-Laurent, and it runs until May 14th. For tickets and more information, visit contacttheater.ca. I'm Sarah DeA. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Still to come, a Montreal dancer tries to tease out our relationship with the web and bring the algorithm to life. When Montreal Improv shuttered its doors during the pandemic, I confess I worried about the loss of this venue and school for the comedy scene here. While the old Montreal Improv on Saint-Laurent below Pine has closed, a new iteration has opened up under new ownership in Saint-Henri. But someone who trod the boards at the old venue has gone on to open a new space for improv further up the main. So we move up from the nightlife central that is Saint-Laurent between Sherbrooke and Pine, and we'll take the 55 bus all the way north up to the Mile End part of the Plateau neighborhood, where Variation Mile End Dance School is based. Jason Grimmer is an improviser and sketch performer, and his partner, Catherine, has operated a dance school for kids and adults for years now. During the pandemic, they added comedy to their portfolio. Partly seeing the Montreal Improv venue go under, they realized there was an opportunity. They've set up a new theater space, and it is now open for shows. Jason is the manager and artistic director at Variations Mile End, and James McGee is an improviser and teacher. I always love having these two on. I spoke with Jason and James yesterday. Welcome, James and Jason, to Upstage. Great to have you guys back.
Great to be here. Thank you.
I think this is my 100th appearance, we're going to say.
It's amazing. Congratulations. I have balloons here for you, but it is not a visual medium, so you'll just have to take my word for it.
All right. Well, I can hear them moving around and white noise. Yeah.
It's a one and a zero and a zero and a T and an H, because I felt like that would be appropriate.
Woo!
Jason, you should be buying balloons and confetti and all that good stuff, because you are launching or have launched a new venue in the Mile End out of an existing creative space. So tell me all about Variations Mile End.
Variations Mile End is a dance school that's been running for, it's been a few years, but altogether about 8 years, created by my partner, Catherine. And so I've been working there. And then over the time of the pandemic, when there was a interim, when there were no improv classes being offered, I started offering them at Variations, which then blossomed into a full-fledged kind of improv stream at the school, turning into more of a performance school as opposed to only a dance school. And now we're at the point where, since we have students in classes, we want to have a place to show their grad shows and other shows. We created a theater in the studios, which we're calling the Theater VME.
Theater VME, I love it. It didn't take too long to settle on the title, I guess.
No. It's it was a coincidence, but it worked.
So Jason, what are the challenges you face in getting a venture like this up and running? Obviously, you started small with the classes and you've been growing ever since.
It sort of fulfilled itself. It became it created a need. So basically, we were renting venues like the Diving Bell, who were very kind to us and very good to us. It was in their great venue, but we needed something more close by so that when students finished their class, they could go to a show or they could have their grad show on the premises. So that was kind of the impetus of it. And we just took one of our existing studios and turned it into a black box theater, which essentially is just painting it black and then adding curtains and lights and sound. And it ends up being exactly what it's called, a black box theater. There's nothing more fancy than that. But seeing shows in a black box theater is a really interesting and great experience. Because I came up through Montreal Improv and they had a couple of black box theaters there, you see sort of see how the intimacy of those kind of venues allow for like performances of more intimate performances. And where improv doesn't use a lot of microphones, if ever, it's important to have that sound ability to be able to hear what people are saying and project in the space. So super exciting to have it. We had our first shows last week, and they were great. Lots of people came out. It was a really funny show. And so we're just continuing it this weekend with another four shows with over two nights, just to sort of celebrate the fact that we've opened this up.
Yeah, it's so exciting. I'm curious, did you do all the work yourself to get the, you know, doing the painting, getting it set up?
I did not. My skill set is completely and utterly managerial. So what I'm actually able to do is find the right people to do the job. So a lot of people helped out. I hired people that knew the stuff. So specifically people who knew the tech, the lights, and then someone who could paint and had worked in theaters before. And that was as simple as that. So those people all came through and it was great. So pretty happy with it.
That is the voice of Jason Grimmer, who is manager and artistic director at Variations Mile End, the performance wing of the space. James, you're a performer and a teacher, and you taught a lot of classes at the defunct Montreal Improv, lower down the main at Prince Arthur, and that closed during the pandemic. So that was kind of a loss for you.
Oh yeah, absolutely, right? It was a large chapter in my life that closed, and kind of what Jason mentioned, and I'll follow up on, is that he had the idea to kind of relaunch classes within the city when there was a lull in that. So that started in summer 2020. So still when COVID-19 was knee high to a grasshopper. So I was able to jump in and along the way help develop classes with Jason and work on curriculums and of course teach the classes. And now that we've got these shows that have launched within the space, it's exciting. And it's also good to see that improv is back in the city with the resurgence of Montreal Improv now in St. Henry, which I consider to be one of the cooler neighborhoods in the city. So having a marriage between both the Mile End and St. Henry is two very cool neighborhoods featuring more and more comedy now is a great thing.
Yeah, so there's more opportunities to perform and more places to see things, more places to take classes.
Yeah, for sure, absolutely. And I think the more laughter in the city during these difficult and uncertain times, the better.
Oh, so well said. So well said, James. That is the voice of James McGee, performer and a teacher in the art of improv. And I just want to clear the air here. There's no competition between these two separate improv spaces. There's no dance battles. There's no West Side Story stuff going on. There's no Omerta involved. Oh,
no, but now that you mentioned the possibility of dance battles, I hope that I can begin competing with any form of art in the city that would result in a dance off to determine city supremacy.
Who would you like to take on?
Anyone and everyone.
Okay.
Doesn't have to be comedy, doesn't have to be improv, sketch, stand up. I want everyone. I want the puppeteers, I want the pole dancers, I want the poets, I want everybody.
What about the people doing strip spelling bee?
Oh, no, I don't want any part of them. They're gonna be able to pull out some nasty tricks from places that I'm not familiar with.
There's absolutely no competition with the two. I think we sort of work together. I mean, in a lot of ways, I still produce shows at Montreal Improv, and the performers there and teachers there perform with us. So I think we work well together. But you know, I'm down for some sort of West Side Story type thing at some point, if that does happen in the sort of mean plains of the plateau.
I would love this too, because I teach improv in a variety of spaces now. So if the prize at the end is full custody of James, then that means I don't have to participate in any dancing as much as I am observing.
You want to be the prize.
I want to be the prize. Dare I say I need to be the prize.
So someone would win you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Only temporarily, and then I would go back to working with everyone as I need to pay my bills.
Fair.
But I do it for the love. Pragmatic. I do it for the love.
Jason, what are some challenges in starting up a new business? I mean, obviously you had the school for dance set up before, but to set up this offshoot, what are the challenges of setting up something new in a pandemic?
You know, the whole thing is it's all challenging, but it's also kind of just organic in a lot of ways. Catherine and I just sort of inherently want to create these classes. The dance school sprung up from her mind and her creativity, and I sort of went along with that. And then when I became interested in improv, she just urged me to do the same thing when there was that lull, when there were no classes, to sort of open up some classes here. So basically it became just kind of, well, if I have to do that, what do I need to do? Okay, well, we need this studio for this. And then it became scheduling, and all that stuff is kind of in my wheelhouse. And then, you know, the theater came next. But I think we started out, we had acting classes for kids, and now we have a youth improv program for kids 8 to 12 that's been running for quite a while now. So it's really just kind of, oh, what can we do now? Oh, let's add this in. And so that's been kind of the sort of way it's been going since. And I think a lot of times when I sit back and I go, oh, this is overwhelming, or this is hard, as I go, well, what else would I want to do? And there's literally nothing else. So to me, I feel like I'm fortunate to have this ability to do this.
Well, don't say that too fast, because there are strip spelling bees, Jason. So if you decide
I don't understand those. I don't know how they work. I don't know how anybody wins at one of those. So I'm not really going to get into that.
Well, the only winners are the audience members, really, because they get to see skin. So tell us about this weekend. What shows can we see as audience members?
Yeah, well, we've got shows happening on Friday at 8 p.m. and 9:30 p.m., as well as Saturday, 8 and 9:30 p.m. So there's going to be a wide variety of styles and formats, things of that nature, as well as a variety of players and performers. So it's been fun to get back into the hustle of getting people on stage to perform and figuring out where people fit best to make an audience laugh.
We're also unveiling our conservatory program that's coming up as well, which gives improvisers with some experience a chance to kind of have an intensive during the summer of 9 weeks and 3 shows of just practicing and working together, working towards a show, working to a second show, and just kind of developing all their skills in a sort of intense period of time, which I think will be a pretty exciting thing for people that are into improv.
Now, not everyone is going to go on to be an improv superstar and pay all their bills from that, you know, except for James. But we know why.
Well, pay all the bills is, might be an overstatement, but I digress.
Why should anyone take an improv class? What's the benefit there?
I can only speak for myself in the fact that I've always been someone who likes performance and is not and has always used improv in everything I've done performance wise. And then I can say that a lot of times it gives you a focus and slows things down to give you sort of understand the tools it takes to sort of engage with people and sort of, you know, further comedic ideas in front of people so that you get that sort of immediate feedback. I mean, that's the kind of thing I got from it. I ended up doing sketch comedy as well. And all those things I think everything is necessary with a basis of improvisation and this sort of idea of working with others and coming up with the best ideas and supporting the best ideas. So that's, I think it can benefit pretty much everyone. This youth program has been like, you can see how the effect on these kids and how much they enjoy this aspect of their lives. So
coming out of the pandemic, it's been a lonely time for a lot of people. I personally have been, you know, working and going into work in person and still in touch with a lot of people, but there's still times where I feel like creaky, you know, like I still need to get into the swings of small talk and interacting with people. I think we must all have that. And do you find there's really like a desire to do improv just because you're looking for human connection?
Well, I would say that Mr. Brian Adams said it best when he said he just couldn't stand another lonely night. And I think there is no better way, and I mean this from my heart of hearts, to find ways to connect with people on a level that is both educational as well as fun and energetic. Take an improv class. If you're interested in the art of comedy, like Jason mentioned, whether it's improv or you want to kind of use that to parlay your skills into stand-up or sketch, improv is fantastic for that. Or if you're just someone looking to break out of your shell, or you're new to the city and you're looking for connection, whatever it is that you're looking for from improv, I believe that improv can provide that. And then along the way, if you're thinking, you know what, I'm really into the idea of performing, improv is there for you in that respect as well. Which is, and essentially, Brian Adams' Lonely Nights was about taking improv classes.
Were those the lyrics from that song?
Yeah, that entire thing that I just mentioned was part of Lonely Nights by Brian Adams.
Catchy. Yeah. The type of classes we offer as well, so for more experienced improvisers, are ones that are keyed towards a specific show. So the theme shows that James and I create a lot of times, like, you know, the Big Book of Improv or the Supercut or things, they're basically specific themed shows that you take the class and you kind of learn how the show works. And then you have a show at the end, as opposed to more of a generalized class. But we do offer as well basics class for newcomers. But the eye is on performance, which is sort of the mandate that Catherine and I and James agrees with. The whole thing should be about, let's perform, like, and have fun performing and learn how to do it properly.
Can you remind us where we can find you?
Yeah, we're at right on Saint-Laurent between McGuire and Saint-Viateur, 5337, number 250 is what you buzz in. And those are our studios, right in my land.
Congratulations on launching a new business like this in the pandemic. I think it's awesome to have a space like this since Montreal Improv closed down the street since reopened in St. Henry, but it's good to have a space again in the neighborhood. Thanks so much, Jason. Thank you so much, James. We also love St. Henry as well.
Yeah, it's cool.
Very cool.
It's okay. Thanks, guys. Have fun this weekend.
Thank you. Sarah.
That was Jason Grimmer and James McGee. Jason is the manager and artistic director at Variations Mile End, the improv school. James McGee is an improviser and teacher. Jason's new performance space has just launched. There are two shows on Friday and two shows on Saturday this coming weekend, 8 and 9:30 p.m. both days. For tickets and more information, please visit catherinevariationsdance.com. That's Catherine with a K. Check them out on Facebook under Variations Mile End. Located at 5337 Saint Laurent, above McGuire, buzzer number 250. I'm Sarah DeAy, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at ckut.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. I met with Simon Portugal as he was preparing for his first feature show at La Chapelle Scène Contemporaine. The team had just finished establishing the structure of the show just yesterday. It's titled Fragile and Useless. They're working on the final details ahead of opening this coming Monday. Simon is a choreographer and dancer originally from Alberta and has been living in Montreal on and off since 2005. His interests lie in both the digital realm and that of the real life world. And Fragile and Useless is an imagining of what folk dance would look like if it was created in our digital age. Simon not only created this work in collaboration with three Montreal performers, Justin DeLuna, Louise-Michel Jackson, and Emile Pinault. He has also created the sound design for the piece, and you're hearing some of that right now. I spoke with Simon Portugal earlier today.
Welcome, Simon, to Upstage. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Sarah. Nice to meet you.
Nice
for
to
having
meet you
me here. Well.
The show opens next week, but you finally saw the very first kind of complete performance for the first time just yesterday. How did that feel?
Like a lot. It was, it was great to see all the elements of the show finally come together. The actual work of the technical collaborators, which up until now has just kind of been fantasy or something on paper also. So it was really, really great.
I'm really intrigued by your kind of thesis or your inspiration, which is to talk about isolation, digitization, and the image. So I guess the collectivity, what does it mean to be in a group or to be in touch with people, but in a digital age? What led you to this? Were you just like online and it kind of came to you? Or what were you thinking of when you started kind of ruminating on what your theme was going to be?
Yeah, so actually there was, is that very long to get into? There was a piece that I had been involved with some years ago, and sort of ideas from that work, yeah, sort of sparked an interest in what contemporary folk dance might look like in the era of sort of hyper-digitization and the internet. Yeah.
What does hyper-digitization mean?
Good question. I mean, I think where our, I feel like our attention is being shaped by the internet and by sources that we don't really have control over, in sort of a massive way. And so I think they're shaping our sociality, how we are together. And I wanted to, yeah, think about that through formal structures on stage together, sort of turning the algorithm into like a shapes together into, mm-hmm. yeah, so that we could sort of see it somehow. And,
I'm curious to know for you as a person, as an artist, like, is there anything in particular about our lives? We lead very online lives, most of us, not everybody, but is there anything like particular that concerns you? Like, is it about maybe the fact that we spend too much time on a screen instead of like being, you know, in person? Or is it not being able, getting distracted all the time because there's always something new happening? Or is it the gamification of our social interactions?
Yeah, I mean, in one way, I just wanted to see what it would look like, if it had a form, okay. Because it's sort of formless. But also, and let's say there are personal concerns that probably feed their way into what we're doing together. I mean, the last couple of years have been pretty insane when it comes to that sort of isolation and being forced to interact through digital images and text and all that. And let's say, yeah, so I started this work in 2019 when that wasn't really the case, although I think the process was like happening already. We just sort of went into hyperspeed mode over the last couple of years.
I'm speaking with Simon Portugal, who is the creator and sound designer of a new show called Fragile and Useless, coming to La Chapelle next week. So Simon, tell me about your work is it accurate to call you a choreographer or more of a designer? Tell me about that.
Yeah, the two main things I'm taking care of at this point, yeah, are choreography and sound design. We can totally call me a choreographer. And I mean, sound design is something that I typically use, like some sort of practice connected to my choreographic practice, so that I can sort of look at dramaturgy and structure. And it just so happens that this sound also, yeah, they're sort of beneficial to each other for me.
Do you feel like you have a lot more control because you're not only thinking about the movement and then you're complementing it with the sound as well?
Yeah, exactly. I sort of think of it as creating some sort of affective environment while also giving cues and moods, textures, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
So how would you define your style as a choreographer? What are you trying to put on stage in terms of movement? How would you qualify it?
Yeah, well, I think this is a very different, I mean, it's the first time I'm working with a group, not performing as well. So there's a very different experience of being able to see what's happening the whole time and having some sort of, yeah, more control over that. It feels a little bit like, yeah, it's an adjustment. Sorry, what was the question again?
Well, tell me, how is it an adjustment? Because you've got four performers, sorry. You have four performers on stage and here you're taking a step back. You're not performing with them. You're the choreographer. How is that different for you as an experience as opposed to what you've done in the past?
Yeah, I would say the focus on what is seen, like, what we're seeing, like, I find that, yeah, working especially on solo forms in the past, things were motivated more by also the development of materials and whatever, were more motivated by, like, let's say, like, a felt sense. Okay, for instance, there was material in my solo work that, like, I was developing for some time. Then you sort of follow this trail and all of a sudden in that solo, I ended up painting my behind on stage with like green paint. You know, there's like some wild like thing that happens when your like body's involved with creating it. And now I feel like, interestingly, there's sort of a separation between that development and how the process is going. So yeah, it's like much more this like strange reliance on what is being seen rather than maybe as also from the position of the performer.
Tell me about the four people you're working with, your dancers.
Yeah, so actually due to budget reasons, we are now working with three people. Who are they? Louise Michelle Jackson, who is well known in the dance community here. She sort of trained in ballet for her youth, but has worked for many people in the city, as well as internationally. There's Justin DeLuna, who I met when I lived and worked in Toronto. He used to dance for Toronto Dance Theatre briefly, and then he moved here and he dances for people like Dana Gengra. And others. And then Emile Pinot is somebody I met more recently, let's say, like in the last 3 years. It's great to work with him. He was initially trained in circus, and then some years ago he transferred into working in choreography, and they're amazing.
That is the voice of Simon Portugal, who is the creator and sound designer behind Fragile and Useless, coming to La Chapelle this week in May, the second week of May at La Chapelle Scène Contemporaine. I love the title, Fragile and Useless. Sometimes don't we all feel that way? Can you tell me about the title that you've selected for this?
Yeah, so initially we started working with this different title, and finally within the last couple of weeks, we settled on Fragile and Useless, sort of as a way, it's in this context of like, yeah, one thinking of what.
Mercredi. Thursday. Friday.
Put your hands up, so if you're ready for the road, let your friend them know. We're ready for the road.
Sunday. Sunday. CKUT 90.3 FM, a different sound every day of the week. Donate now, help support your community radio.
And welcome to the May 5th edition of Gray Matters. Tonight on the show, we have a lecture from Alternative Radio, as usual, by Ray McGovern. It's entitled Hidden History of U.S.-Ukraine-Russia Relations. It was recorded in Raleigh, North Carolina on April 19th of this year. Ray McGovern is a former Central Intelligence Agency officer. He was a CIA analyst from 1963 to 1990. In the 1980s, he chaired the National Intelligence Estimates and prepared the President's Daily Brief. Today, he is active in the peace and justice movement and works for Tell the Word, a ministry of the inner city Washington, D.C. Church of the Savior. So, without any further ado, here's tonight's lecture on Gray Matters entitled Hidden History of U.S.-Ukraine-Russia Relations by Ray McGovern.
Part of the deal will be that Donetsk and Luhansk will have a measure of autonomy within the Ukrainian state,